Hi, welcome to What's On Your Mind. My name is Peter Snowaert, and today I give you two gentlemen from the US. I've been on their podcast. The name of the podcast is JKWD for Joss Kelvin World Domination, and it's not in a bad sense, but in a good sense. Josh Scheer and Kelvin Ringgold, and I asked them one question: what's on your mind? And you will discover the answer in our great, inspiring conversation. Enjoy Josh and Kelvin. Bye-bye.
Welcome to What's On Your Mind with Peter Snowaert. Every week, a guest talks about his or her story, and that story can inspire you to change your own. Here's Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Kelvin Ringgold. He speaks to backgrounds.
Hi, background.
Yes, I do.
And we are recording, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning it is now for you, eh?
Yeah. Good morning, Kelvin. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Time traveling all at once.
Yes. First of all, I want to rephrase again and reconfirm again. I'm based in Belgium, not in the United Kingdom. Okay. Now, last time I was a guest in your podcast. Today you're both a guest in my podcast, What's On Your Mind. Now, and this is my first question. I'm going to start with you, Josh. What is on your mind at this moment?
What is on my mind at this moment? At this moment, I've been pondering creativity. I've been doing a lot of research into, you know, the neurobiology behind it and how to get more of it and how to exercise it.
Okay. Yeah. And where did you get that fascination?
I don't know. Every now and then, and about every 18 months or so, I get really into artwork that makes me uncomfortable for one reason or another. And typically it's graffiti art, because I don't understand it. I can't read it. I don't have the guts to go out and scribble on walls. And when I was, I don't know the Belgian equivalent, but when I was in eighth grade here, it's middle school, 13 years old or so here in the States, I was in an art class and I just could not get the technical concepts. And my parents came in on a teacher conference, and he said, I'm gonna give your son a C, but don't let him take any more art classes. So, it scared me away from art for decades. And I decided a few years ago that I wasn't going to be scared of it anymore. And I went to Udemy and took a little sketch class, and I practiced. And I did a little bit of sketching while I was in Hawaii a few years ago. And recently I brought it back out. It's just something that I wanted to feel again. I put pencil to paper and play and just let thoughts flow. If you do a little extra in one realm, it kind of opens up your other realms. If you're stuck in writing, or you're stuck for podcast ideas or anything really, messing with one part of your mind that you don't tap into a lot opens up your mind to all the other stuff.
Where you're blocked. You said writing. I saw on LinkedIn you are a, how do you call it, a producer? Is that a journalist? Or
I'm a journalist by training. I was a newspaper reporter for years, and now I work with websites on the kind of the back end. You don't see my name on them, but we're doing on-site promotion. So if you go to if you go to the website of your daily newspaper, and you see the news that's in a prominent spot, I've moved it to that prominent spot, and decided what if sometimes we've sent it to mobile devices or used Facebook and Twitter for the sites and that kind of thing. So I'm behind the scenes. I'm also a blogger, and I'm sure you know since you were there that Kelvin and I have a podcast, and I'm working on a book that hopefully we're looking at mid 2023 mid-2022. I am. Hopefully middle of next year.
You're alone or together with Calvin?
Probably just me on this one, but we have some other projects that we keep talking about that we haven't quite nailed down yet.
And the book is about what?
An argument and an operating manual to get more creativity, more kindness, more happiness in your life.
Because that's actually your purpose or mission, if I'm correct, eh? If I read it on your personal site?
Yes. Yeah, that all came together and... Mm-hmm, go ahead, sorry.
No, go.
It all gelled in my head a few years ago, and more so, when my wife was pregnant with our daughter, who is 2 years old now, I was training for a marathon, and that gives you, especially a slow runner like me, gives me a lot of time on the road to think and create, and it all kind of gelled then. And the first year I was home with the baby and then working at night, so I didn't get a lot accomplished, but now I've really set it down that I'm going to finish up the research in the second quarter here of the year and then move on to starting to write the first draft in the third quarter of 2021 and really try to get it out by mid-late 2022.
Now your mission is to create more happiness. Mm-hmm. People feel better about themselves in the world. Where did you get that mission, and how did you discover that? Because it was something that was lacking in your life?
Yeah, I think a lot of that. I think a lot of us don't identify as unhappy. Just there's this underlying angst that a lot of us have, just like a little bit of discomfort, not the sort of discomfort that you have to go through to do something big, right? Like there's a discomfort you have to work through, whether you're going to start a company or run a marathon or even do a podcast, right? But there's like this little nagging, oh, well, why am I angry at that? And why am I getting 45 minutes less sleep than I actually need? And why do I feel the need to flop down on the couch instead of taking a walk? Just, we don't identify that as unhappiness, but when you get kind of more happiness in your life, you get more energy, and all of a sudden all that little nagging stuff is gone. Mm. And that's something that came to me, through the running's really a moving meditation for me, especially when I'm out for, two and a half, three hours at a time. Yeah, I know some people prefer to do that in a sit. I prefer to do it moving. That's where it came to me, and what world do I want to leave for my daughter? What kind of ancestor do I want to be?
Mm-hmm. And was there something that triggered you to start all these initiatives? Was there some kind of trick? Was that the birth of your daughter? Or was it even before that?
No, I think it was before that. Yeah, I've always been a writer, and it's how I work things out in my head. Mm-hmm. Dating back probably to high school, really. It's how I, writing down, journaling is how I work things out for me. And I tend to be more active when I'm doing it for other people. If I'm doing it in a public space, like a blog, I'm more likely to try to work something out for me. And if I have an audience that I think I'm giving it to, I don't care if anybody reads it, but if it's in a public space, I'm more likely to really put thought into it rather than dragging my feet and letting it sit and again, just kind of irk me for a while. And okay. Cool. A few years ago, Kelvin did this mastermind project, Master Key Experience. And as part of that, among many of the other things they do is they talk about pivotal personal needs. There are seven of them. And really we need all seven of them, and all seven of them make us feel good. But two would really click with us, and the other five will just come along. And one of those is legacy. Yeah, for me.
What are the seven? Can you name seven?
I can't. Kelvin probably can. And the legacy, okay. Helping others, autonomy, liberty. Go ahead.
We got legacy, spiritual growth, autonomy, liberty, helping others, recognition for creative expression, and true health.
Okay. Because I heard a similar version last week, but there were six of them. So, okay. And so the writing for you, it's all about things that are going on in your head and putting it on paper. If somebody now has some kind of feeling, okay, I'm not 100% happy, I have that nagging thing, so instead of taking a walk, but I'm going to dive into the couch and grab a bag of chips and watch some Netflix movie, what would you recommend to them as a baby step to change their life?
Well, I'd have them examine what hole that's filling and if it's actually serving what they want to feel. Because sometimes that's the right thing to do, right? Sometimes you just need to veg out, but we don't need to do it as a regular habit, right? We weren't built for that. We weren't built to sit in these chairs and look at a screen for 8, 9, 10, 12, 14 hours a day like some people are. Sometimes more in our collective quarantine here. We were made to get up and move and be outside, and we just don't get enough of that in modern society. And again, I know that the statistics I know are U.S. centric, but I've heard people joke about limiting screen time to 60 minutes an hour during quarantine. So
is it
60 minutes an hour? Yep.
Is that an April 1 joke or something?
No, that's just how do you parent when the kids are are on their screen for school and you're on your screen for work and nobody gets to go out to do anything? What do you do afterwards? You can't go out to dinner. You can't go to the playground. What do you do? It's just sit in front of the screen. What I did do was some research on the neurobiology of happiness, what goes on in the brain. A lot of us like dopamine. It's that, like, did somebody like my Facebook post? Did somebody, did somebody leave an Instagram comment? Yeah, that really hits our dopamine triggers, and that's the thing that we get addicted to, right? But there are other forms of happiness. There are other happiness chemicals. There's oxytocin you get when you, from a cup of coffee or a bite of chocolate. There's serotonin, which you get from a hug. Those are also happiness chemicals. There are other ways to feel happy, and there are ways to get those things, small accomplishments, checking off your checklist, exercise, small bits of deep stress. Like a lot of people feel really good when they get out of the sauna. You go into something really hot and then you come out of it and you're like, that's a happiness chemical flooding your system. Mm-hmm. Same with, if you have cold exposure, you take an ice bath and you're like, you're in the bath, but you get out of the bath and that's a happiness chemical flooding your system. So it's a matter of, hey, I know that you're comfortable, but you're really not happy. It's a little bit of dis-ease, right? It's or unease, really. And there, if you introduce people to little bits of happiness, they'll look for it.
Yes. Okay. Do you know Mathieu Ricard?
Mathieu Ricard? No, I don't.
Mathieu Ricard has been in the press seen as the happiest man alive. And they have done, the science has done a research on his brains. Mm-hmm. And he's actually part of he lives in Tibet, I believe. He's a monk. So the guy meditates for hours and hours and hours. And apparently because of that, he is seen as the happiest man alive. Yeah, Mathieu Ricard is quite known. Yeah, he looks like a monk, with some orange
robes.
How do you call it? Yeah, robes. That one. Now, you talked about exercising is important. Mm-hmm. Then we move to Kelvin, because in the beginning, which was not recorded, we let Kelvin do some exercising, changing his background. So I assume, Kelvin, right now you are the happiest man of us three.
Well, I'm the happiest guy in my house right now, I'll tell you that for sure. And I am happy not to share with your audience the mess that's behind the curtain. I will tell you, it was okay, but it's good.
My question for you: what is on your mind, Kelvin?
You know, I the way you put that is very interesting, and I had to sit and think about that. I like being happy. As a matter of fact, I spend a lot of time talking about being happy, and happy to me may be something different than it is to a lot of people.
What does it mean for you?
Well, I'm kind of easy to get along with for the most part. I like the fact that I'm alive, awake, breathing, and, you know, taking in nourishment and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 67 years old. I have no ailments. I'm on no medications. I wake up every morning happy, and I can see everything. So that's kind of a lot of it for me. Luckily, I'm not living in a war zone or anywhere. Well, maybe inside some people's heads, but you know, life is good. So my focus, a lot of my attention is directed to helping other people feel that. Feel good about being here on the planet, feel good about being themselves, letting them know they've got a lot of self-worth, and just having them be happy in themselves and not necessarily because something in particular makes them happy. It's like, I wake up breathing. It's a good start for me.
So this means that for you, happiness is an inside job, and it's not putting, it's not relying or making your happiness dependent on external factors like a house, a baby, a car, a title, money, success, blah blah blah.
Yeah, exactly. For the most part.
I mean, and
you know, once you have, I mean, once you are happy about existing, you feel better about doing the things you're going to do on a daily day, you know, on a day to day basis. Anyway, because you have more energy to do that. If you're depressed, if you're angry, if you've got all that floating around, you got to wade through all of that before you can get to do anything. And I don't have any of that. I don't almost say I don't have any of it. I get frustrated from time to time, but I don't keep it. I get rid of that. I would just as soon walk into a wall and laugh at myself because I forgot to turn the corner, you know, than to just sit there and mope all day. I don't generally do that.
And is it because you were born that way, or is it because you, between brackets, reprogrammed yourself that way?
No, I wasn't born that way. I wasn't born that way. I tell people I don't remember a lot of my childhood. I guess I don't remember, you know, a lot of detail from that except for specific things. But I was okay, but when I was probably in my early 20s, mid-20s, I started doing a lot of reading. I started getting into the whole positive mental attitude thing,
okay,
understanding this stuff, learning about gratitude. And, you know, I read people like Tony Robbins and, mm-hmm, and Stephen Covey and a lot of other people whose names don't always come to mind. But the whole mindset, like, where are you going to start? And I learned, particularly in the MKMMA that Josh was talking about a few minutes ago. I mean, they tell you happiness is an inside job. You know, the world within creates the world without. A lot of people have talked about that over time. Hanel, who is Think and Grow Rich, that guy, Napoleon Hill, all these people. Yeah. And once you start to look at that, and then I started looking at the people who were happy, and why they were happy. You know, they're having a whole lot better time. So whatever I can do in most cases to make somebody else feel better about being on a planet, I'll do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's kind of my focus, having people just enjoy life.
Now you're inspiring me something. Yesterday I'm searching. I saw a quote, and I think it's great. The meaning of life is to find your gifts. The purpose of life is to give it away.
I've seen that, and that's good. A few years ago, I started. Actually, I think it was back in 2013. No, maybe 2003. I started writing because I was always on social media and stuff, and I was always a happy guy. And people used to say to me, "Hey, you're so happy! Like, what would you charge for a daily dose of positive?" And I was okay. Like, "Oh, that's really nice. I'm really, you know, that's good. Thank you." And I didn't worry. I didn't even think about that because, whoa, I'm going to put something out every day. No, that's not going to work. And then, as I thought more about it, and the stuff that people said to me while I was online, because I spend a lot of time making other people feel better, you know, if I see you, then provided you haven't, you know, shut me down for not remembering you're in Belgium, you know, that was a good joke. That was a fun day. I'm about helping people feel better. And even on social media, I started to get that reputation. So people would start interacting with me on, at the time, mostly was Twitter, because I made them feel better. And at one point, there was a gentleman on Twitter who put out on Twitter, it was kind of scary, he said, you should follow Kelvin Ringel. He's got time for everybody who needs it. That scared me.
Okay.
Because that was a lot. But basically, people would come into my space because I made them feel good. If they were sad, I tried to make them happy or give them reasons to be happy. And I kind of got that reputation. So at a point when somebody asked me, hey, what would you do for a daily dose of positive? And once I thought about it, I started writing one. And I published the first issue of that, just email thing, October 16th, 2000 and, what year is this? 2010. And I've been doing it ever since. As a matter of fact, if I had been as consistent with everything in my life as I have been with my vitamin K, and that's vitamin K for Kelvin, because somebody said, hey, where you been? I miss my vitamin K. You know, come over here and talk to me. I started doing that. So I've done that for, it's going on 11 years.
And I've every day, an email.
Monday through Friday, 52 weeks a year. I've missed one day since that date, since I started.
Wow.
And that was a technology problem. I just screwed up. So sometimes there's typos in them.
Yeah, okay, bye.
Me and spelling aren't really good at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I mean, the thing is, it's intention, eh? And if the intention is about giving, people feel that's the means, eh? So the spelling, that's a detail. I mean, it's about the feeling that you want to transfer. I mean, the fact that happiness is really a giving and servicing of other people. How long did you know that? Because for me, it's something that I think I'm now becoming 46. It's something that I did not know like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And really about giving, eh? From the heart. Eh?
Well, yeah. When I started, you know, because I joined the military at 17.
Mm-hmm.
I actually turned 18 in basic training, U.S. Air Force. And I didn't have it then. Somewhere along the line, I think I got hooked up with some folks who were in network marketing, and I started reading. The first book I read that had a really big impact on me as far as the mind was a book called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. And he was talking about what happens inside the subconscious mind. And this guy was a he was a plastic surgeon, and he went off on a kind of a psychological journey because the people he was talking about, the people that he would do this plastic surgery on, but when they got done, he'd spend all this time completely changed their look, but when they didn't see it, mm-hmm. they look in the mirror like on the same thing, and he's like, why is that? And then he started talking about the self-image, and I'm like, okay, I'm interested in the self-image guy. I need to get more work into him. So that's kind of been my study from that point on, and that's when I started to change and get to be that happier guy and do it all the time and help other people do it. And you know, people feel good when you make them feel better.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't get to lie to them, but I tell them, I mean, you got value, you know, you have worth, you know, you may not be as tall as everybody else, but who cares? The world needs short people. Look at me, you know? So I started studying that path and I've just sort of never stopped. Now, so I'm there now. Now, you know, we're into, you know, the law of attraction, which was really exciting for me. And a lot of other things that just talk about what happens in the mind and how you form the image of who you are and how to change the image of who you are and realize that you have value just because you're on the planet and breathing.
No. No. And that's the strange thing about it, is that a lot of people, most of the people, they think they are not good enough. But for nature, we are good enough.
For nature, we are good enough. So my thing is basically all things self-image. I became a professional photographer so I could take pictures of people. Most people hate having their pictures taken.
Mm-hmm.
Except today when they got selfies. Selfies are good. But I liked the fact that I could take somebody's portrait and they would feel better about themselves. Oh, look, I do look pretty. First time I had I was doing senior portraits for, you know, high school kids. And one time I had some folks come to the studio and I photographed the young girl, and she was looking at the photos, and she said to her mom, "Look, Mom, I am pretty." And I almost cried. I was like, oh, that's the reason I became a photographer, that kind of thing. So between the photography, and then I'm a life coach because I want to do that formally to help people figure that out. Sometimes mm-hmm. I keep forgetting the charge, but, you know, when somebody talks to me for a couple of weeks or month or so, and they come back later and they say, you know what, I'm in a happy spot I am in today because I talked to you, I'm good with that. So that's my stuff. Me, the self-image, the fact that just because you don't see the sun in the sky doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah, that's true.
All that, that's...
It's always there,
that's,
right?
That's my whole thing.
And because your mission is quite the same, where did you guys meet? Was that online, or did you meet in some smoky bar in, I don't know?
No, we actually met at a smoky picnic. A friend of ours had a party, and Josh and I ended up there, you know, together. Josh is kind of a low-key fellow. I am not. I'm still don't know, you know, based on our personality types, mm-hmm. I still don't know why he talks to me. Because I know I drove him crazy initially, like, the guy never shuts up. And
there's a reason that once a week is good.
Yeah, exactly. But we met there and we became friends at that point. And that was interesting. We didn't become friends from that particular event, but we kept ending up at events together.
Mm-hmm.
There was a professional, I don't know, recreation club. I forget what they called it now, but you know, young professionals, they'd get together and do bowling sports or, you know, have pizza parties and stuff like that. And we would end up at those events together. And eventually we got to having a conversation. And strangely enough, we clicked rather well.
And eventually we started having lunch every week. And then I moved 1,000 miles away and we moved lunch to Zoom. And I said, hey, these are really interesting conversations. Let's start a podcast. Let other people eavesdrop on it. And
that's gel, that thing that bonds you together, that's a deeper mission to help other people to feel better, to create happiness in their lives?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think that's well put. I don't think we've ever put it.
That's it.
I don't think we've ever hunted down those words, but that sounds
okay.
About right.
I'm going to send my invoice for.
Yeah, you know, we didn't have that. We didn't hunt down those words per se, but when we came up with, or when Josh came up with, JKWD podcast, which JKWD is Josh and Kelvin World Domination.
World Domination, eh?
Right. But the
why the world domination? Because the fact is, a world domination. I was like, whoa, what is this? But then I saw it was all about happiness and making feel people better.
Because yeah, it's about teaching you how.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Josh.
I was gonna say it's teaching you how to dominate your world.
No, okay.
As opposed to, I mean, if taking over the world is gonna be good for you, do it by all means. I think most people are not going to be happy in that position. It sounds like a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
You look at Jim Carrey's what was the movie where he becomes God? He's like, Oh God.
I think it was Oh God. Book one and book two.
Bruce Almighty. Yeah, you're right. He pulls the moon in for his romantic evening and make the moon really big. But what he really does is floods the other half of the world. Yeah, there's a lot of responsibility that goes on with running things. So dominate your world. And if your world wants something bigger, then go get something bigger. If your world wants to dominate your garage, then do that.
Yeah, but it's all you focused, you know, figuring out what you want and making your world work for you.
But isn't that just a challenge for a lot of people that they don't know what the hell they want?
That is correct.
And how do people? It's the same with follow your passion. And then the next question, how do I find my passion? That's the question I get.
And it's a good question. I'm not sure I can state Josh's passion, but mine is, as I stated, when I can help somebody else feel better, I'm good. My father is a minister, and for years, you know, I was a child for a lot of years, actually. But my father used to tell me all the time, you know, you're going to be a preacher. You're going to be a minister when you grow up. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. Mm. And he's like, you know, God called you to preach. And I'm like, he hasn't had that conversation with me. So we're really good with that. So.
Well, and here you are, a preacher of a different sort, though.
But yeah. And as I got older and started looking at it, then people talk about my ministry and I rejected those words. And then I realized ministry doesn't have to be religious, per se, you know, and spiritual doesn't have to be religious, mm-hmm. per se. We all have a spirit. So I stopped fighting those words and just
embracing,
you know, my definition of what they meant. And I kept going and it's what I do. I kind of can't help it. So to the point where if I don't happen to be in a good mood, I refrain from being in public because I don't want to inflict anybody with a bad mood I've got for whatever reason. I get through that, and then I'll go back and talk to my public again. But I'm not just going to take it out there and mess with people. Some people like the, you know, misery likes company. I'm good alone. In the process of all of that, I decided that I kind of like me as a person.
Mm-hmm.
The huge advantage of that is if I'm alone with me, I'm okay with that. I know a lot of people who can't be alone. They've got to be in the middle of other people. They've got to be doing something. I can sit in the house and listen to my clock tick for a mm-hmm. long time. I've learned some meditations, and I'm okay being quiet with myself. I get a lot of conversations that way because, I talk to me. But I'm happy with me as a human, and my thing is to help other people be happy with themselves as humans. You know, yeah, some people do some pretty crazy stuff, but there's a reason in most cases. You know, I mean, there's a reason in all cases. We don't always know what it is. But if somebody is inflicting unhappiness on you because they're unhappy, well, you know, maybe somebody spent their life making them unhappy, and that's the only way they know. I sometimes can affect that in a positive way, and they feel better. Not always. I mean, I've got one friend right now that we started talking. I would consider them an exceptionally negative person. I'm like, I don't even know why I talk to them. And I would talk positivity things to them, and they would just say, like, you're too positive for me. I can't stand you. Get out of my face. But okay. Now, when they have something going on, they're like, you know, you're my positive friend. You're my one positive friend. So when I have something positive, I call you to let you know. And I'm like, okay, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. So I have my effect on people, and I don't have to beat them. I continue being me. And if I can't take it, I just disassociate. I mean, it's no need of me, talking bad about them. It's just like, okay, this is not my fertile ground, so I need to get away from this. And at some point, if they value our relationship enough to calm down and maybe not inflict that on me, then, okay, we can have another conversation. And I've had that happen, too. People are like, okay, well, let's talk. Sure. And I'm good.
Isn't it the fact that you are aware of that your superpower is helping other people to feel good? For a lot of people, they think their superpower has to be something practical, like drawing or writing or playing music or skiing or whatever. Isn't that also a little bit the I wouldn't call it the issue, but the fact that people always think some kind of passion of superpower, it needs to be something what they call maybe spectacular. Isn't that a little bit that it's like a diamond which is lying in front of us, but we have to change the way we look at things so that we can see the diamonds, because with our old glasses we think it's a pile of shit of mud. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I've had people, we've had that conversation with some people. I was at an event once, and they asked, you know, they went around the room and asked people what their superpower was. And my superpower was I can find the positive in almost any situation. Well, I think I said all in any situation there, but that's a big task. But I can find a silver lining in almost any cloud. Sometimes you have to look for it. Sometimes you have to force it. But it's there. And, you know, my boy Tony Robbins, in one of his books, he said, you know, things happen to people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things happen that you think are bad, but when you get down the road, you find out that they've given you an advantage in another place. Yeah. So he said, you know, you may have a day, and it could be the best day of your life. It could be the worst day of your life, but you probably won't know for some time what happened during that day and what it did for you.
Yeah.
So I look at that also.
Seeing it from that perspective, everything what happens is a lesson or a gift, even if it firsthand looks like something very bad.
And you can turn it around. I mean, if it's bad, I mean, a car accident may have kept you out of something else.
Yeah.
You know? You just never know.
And I think we learn more deeply from those things too. I forget where I heard this, but we are more some of our failures than our successes. You know, we learn more from what we don't get right and from trying again. And you listen to Thomas Edison. I didn't fail 10,000 times. Just learned 10,000 ways not to make a light bulb filament.
Light bulb, yeah.
Isn't that the beauty of it? I know. I mean, if everything would be perfect and there would be no, how do you say that, some of these more negative situations, I mean, would life be boring?
Well, I think we need some sort of tension in our lives, right? Because we feel best when we relieve tension. And we don't have to put extreme tension on it. We don't have to go off a mountain in a wingsuit to get that tension, or see if we're going to make it to the bottom.
I'm not going to do that.
We don't have to get into a physical fight with, eight guys twice our size to create that tension. But there's no such thing as a good movie without a little tension in it. It's the release of that tension and the resolution to it that really gives us some perspective on how we're going to live and
overcoming something.
Yeah, but also if you look at music, that's what they learn. Eh? They mm-hmm. learn how to create music by some kind of resolution. I mean, then they going to create tension and then the resolution. It's how it works. It's like that. Oh, but you need that tension in order to make it special. Otherwise, it would sound quite boring, and it would it would sound like Justin Bieber 100% all of the time.
Or it would sound very strange, right? You play a 1-4-5-6, and you never go back to that one. you just leave it hanging up there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And you're a musician, so. And Josh is kind of a musician. He's a.
Oh, I mean,
he doesn't do it regularly.
Yeah,
you play a little guitar.
Yeah, yeah, I play piano and guitar and. Percussion. Yeah. I just don't do it. I just don't do it in public. I found that does not serve me very well. I found that in order to get behind a microphone, I consume large amounts of alcohol. So.
Oh, okay. Oh well.
Yeah, I'm just not.
That makes the music better.
makes it sound better to me, probably not to everybody else.
yes. But the thing is, Josh and Kelvin, is that Josh, mm-hmm. is that. Writing is making other people happy through the writing. With Kelvin, it's his superpower, making other people feeling good, positive. And for me, playing music, what I discovered like 5 years ago, is not about the music. It's I make people happy, touch their hearts by playing music. So Kelvin does it with words. I do it with chords and music mm-hmm. and melodies. So it basically comes all down to the same thing. It's about helping other people.
I think
I feel better when I help somebody else feel better, for sure.
And being a service to others, in some way, shape, or form, it seems to be a good way to live our lives and enjoy ourselves through it.
That's something that I heard, I think yesterday or the day before, I don't know where I got it, but if you're in big trouble and you're not feeling well, one of the things that you could do is to help other people who are even in deeper trouble mm-hmm. and help them, because it's going to give you some perspective.
Yep. Perspective is good. And then one thing that I have learned, it can always be worse.
you
don't want to hear that. It could always be worse.
And you learned that the hard way, because you were in worse situations?
Well, I mean, I've been in worse situations, but I've watched other people's situations. I go out. There's a lot of different conditions around the world. I may have a broken leg, but somebody else may not have any legs, And I've never had a broken leg. Thank you very much. I'm okay with not having that experience. But even when the pandemic came through and everybody was talking about how horrible it was, this is not the worst plague we ever had. It's not the most damaging thing that's ever happened to us. A few months ago, over here, we had a comet explode in the atmosphere over Toronto, over Canada. And we heard the sound from that all up and down the the what do you want to call it?
The Great Lakes area, really.
The Great Lakes area. Like, what is it? What was that noise? And then you find out a comet, you know, exploded. Now, if that sucker had gotten through the atmosphere, mm-hmm. you know, life would have been a whole lot different that day.
The dinosaurs would be back again.
Yeah, so everybody's like, "What was that weird noise?" I don't know, and they went on about their business. But if it hadn't disintegrated in the atmosphere, we'd have had a whole different set of problems. And then I was reading about how many comets actually burn up in the atmosphere every single day that we never know about. It's like, oh, wow. Yeah, it could always be worse.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that keeps me moving. Yep.
Now, you're both writers. You're mm-hmm. both readers. Josh, I mean, I'm going to start with Kelvin. Kelvin is a big Tony Robbins fan. Napoleon Hill you also mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
What is for you, Kelvin, the book that, or books that changed your life?
The books that changed my life. The first book was Psycho-Cybernetics.
Yeah, that's what you're
which
saying.
Which Maxwell Maltz. The next one was Unlimited Power by Tony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective mm-hmm. People. Those are the first three. But there's another book that's more on the spiritual, not religious, spiritual level. It's called Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah by Richard Bach. That book put an entirely different spin on my life.
Why? Because I don't know the book.
Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah by Richard Bach. It's probably 30 years old now, but that was a story, but it was such the book that changed my life, I say, is that book.
And can you give us a little bit more details? What's
no.
what? You have to read it.
Because it's a story. Mm. And it's just, it's a paperback over here. And it's a way of looking at life, basically. Some people find some resemblance to the Bible. I did not necessarily say that, although it starts. But it's a story. It's not a big book. It's...
Yeah, it might not be over 100 pages.
I don't see a copy of it. It's only, you know,
Went
probably
150
pages or so, and there's a lot of white space. But it is just a story. Richard Bach, it's the same guy who wrote, and I don't know if you've ever heard about the book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Yes, of course.
Okay. Jonathan Livingston Seagull, I think, was his first book. I think Illusions was next.
Ooh.
Josh, you got a copy there, yeah.
Yeah, it's not quite 200 pages, but you can see that it's tiny. It fits in my hand.
A lot of white space. It's the only book I've ever bought for the express purpose of giving it away.
Okay. Cool. Now you inspired me. I'm curious. Are you
Josh? Somebody will be like, I don't get it. I'm saying, okay, give me back the book. You don't deserve it.
And that book
did that for me.
And you, Josh, also that book?
No, this book didn't ship it for me the way that it does for Kelvin. I've read it. It's important to some people in my life, including Kelvin. And, my wife read it. In fact, I got to tell you, Kelvin was visiting us a few years ago. He was talking about the book, and he was talking about how it changed him. My wife felt she needed a copy. And we happened to be downtown at a restaurant or a bar or something, and we walked over to the local used bookshop. And this is one of those old-time bookshops where you step down into the place, you know, watch your head, even me, watch your head getting in there, and... There are these stacks of books, and sometimes you have to kind of sidestep and get around them, and then you find another room, but you have to kind of shimmy sideways to get into the closet, to get into that other room. We walked in and we looked at the guy at the desk and we said, "Do you have a copy of Illusions by Richard Bach?" And he said, "You know, I think I have one copy." He knew right where it was. He walked around one row and then another stack and then went around a pile and then pulled it right out of the shelf. And it was $2, and that's exactly how much cash we had on us. We had been buying meals on our debit cards. And so there's one copy, you knew exactly where it was, and it cost exactly the amount of money we had on it. So we knew it was the right book at the time.
That's a book.
Yeah. But for me, the books are much different, in a much different vein. Operating Manual for Spaceship Earth by Buckminster Fuller. The opening metaphor he gives about piano tops. If you're in a shipwreck, a piano top floating by makes a nice little life raft, but it's not the ideal solution for the job, but it'll do. And he says, we're clinging to a great many piano tops in our lives. We have a lot of things that we do just, this isn't the right thing for the job, but it'll do for now. And we just leave those things in place. And he goes on to describe, again, that's also not a big book. It's maybe 120 pages. And the last third of it is probably math. Is math that's over my head. Buckminster Fuller invented the geodesic dome and that kind of stuff. But the first half of the book really is an argument for firming up the things that are important to us and what he calls the great pirates. You need to know a little bit about a lot. You need to know enough mm-hmm. about a lot and then have people in place who can do things well, but you have to know enough about the things that you hire people to do so that you can tell if you're getting screwed. So he kind of makes that argument against specialization, but for learning a lot. Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, which is the autobiography of Richard Feynman, who is one of the physicists on the Manhattan Project. He helped develop the nuclear weapons. He wanted to turn down his Nobel Prize, but they told him, it's actually... He thought it was too much hubbub in his life. And it's going to be worse for you if you turn it down. You're going to get more calls from the press, and you're going to get more interview requests. Just go get the thing, and you can put it on the shelf and forget about it. But he's a guy who, when he was feeling blocked, he went outside and saw somebody throwing a Frisbee around, and it changed his whole view on some physics. But he's also a guy who... He decided to start playing drums, and he wound up performing. And then somebody said he started sketching because he felt like it. And somebody said, "Oh, you'll never be a great artist." And, well, he got good enough to have his own gallery show, and he did enough things that he wanted to do, that he enjoyed life, and he was very good at a bunch of things. And some of the other books I look to are Ben Franklin's autobiography, and mm-hmm. he built himself a very interesting life, especially if you couple his autobiography with Walter Isaacson's biography of him, because in our autobiographies we kind of give the best version of ourselves and what we'd like to pass on to the world, but a good biographer will find the stuff that we overlooked that is also interesting.
Is that like the dirt, or is it?
Yeah. I think also that word. Now talking about autobiographies, what would you tell? I'm going to ask that question first to Kelvin. What would you tell your 18-year young self in terms of advice? So if you now would meet the 18-year-young Kelvin, what advice would you give him?
Don't wait. Don't wait. Whatever it is that you're looking to do, start now. Because 50 years goes by entirely too quickly. That, and don't doubt yourself. You have a dream, you have a desire for a reason. That means you got something to do. Don't wait. Follow it now.
Wow. And you, Josh?
I have exactly the opposite advice for my 18-year-old self. My 18-year-old self was diving into everything without thinking about it. I had no good concept of who I was until I was well into my 30s. And I tell my 18-year-old self to slow down, take a minute, look around, learn who you are, figure out who you are, figure out who you want around you, start slow and build up. Don't dive into everything 100 miles an hour and then just brace yourself when that wall comes, because the wall's coming. that's how I was for most of my 20s.
Now, do you see why it's such a miracle that Josh and I do a podcast together?
Yeah, but that's the yin and
yang. We are so different. And I say all the time, I don't know why he talks to me. Well, but here we are.
It's the yin and the yang. It's the salt and the pepper. Eh? It's the...
Literally, almost. Yeah.
is the one is the gin and the other is the tonic?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. So... But all that, all that considered, we make, I've got a podcast of my own, but my podcast, and we started them at about the same time. I might have started mine first.
You started yours first, yeah, by a little bit.
I started mine first. Mm-hmm. So I think I've got 95 issues on my podcast, and Josh and I, we just uploaded issue 253. Mm-hmm. So, clearly, although I've loved my podcast, working with Josh is a commitment, and I've never bailed on him. I've never bailed on our team. I have bailed on my own particular one a number of times.
And by the way, he didn't bail on his team during like a medical emergency that took up a couple of weeks of his life a few years ago. And
I didn't?
No.
I forgot about.
Yeah. We weren't recording ahead. We didn't plan for that. When we knew that Marlena was coming, that we planned ahead and, to miss a few weeks. And, we recorded multiple versions so that, multiple episodes so that we could, skip a couple of weeks and not miss an episode. But yeah, mm-hmm. even during some tough times with your health there, we managed to get them done.
Yep.
Wow.
So it's been a good friendship all the way around.
And within 10 years, Kelvin, who is Kelvin?
Within 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. Oh, that's bad. Oh, that's actually making me commit to something. I committed to some things. Apparently I didn't commit to some, I started to commit to some things a while back. But in 10 years, there's a guy named Dan Sullivan. He's the owner of a business called Strategic Coach. He wrote a book called My Plan to Live to Be 156. Mm-hmm. So I'm planning to live to be 156. And the premise of that book was, you know, an awful lot of us are planning to die at 75 or 80 or something like mm-hmm. that. So as you get closer, you kind of slow down and you accept it. And the premise is how would you be living and taking care of yourself if you expected to live to 156 and not like 80? You'd be vibrant. You'd be still feeding your mind, stuff like that. Well, I intend to be feeding my mind. I intend to be independently wealthy. I missed a couple of turns on that trip in the last couple of years. And I intend to be helping a lot more people. I've got a book I've been writing, and actually it's a compilation of the 10 years of daily messages that I have been mm-hmm. putting together. And I intend to complete that. I have stated that intention before. I've bailed on it a couple of times. Commit to giving Josh a copy of it next year, and maybe I'll finish it so I can not let him down. You know, like what we've been going. But I plan to keep doing what I'm doing. I also do public speaking. I plan to be life coaching. I plan to be sharing these views as long as I can breathe and move around on my own power, and helping people feel better about life and themselves.
Cool. It's your book sounds like the sequel of The Chicken Soup of the Soul.
In many ways, yeah. In many ways.
Cool. And you, Josh, within 10 years, who is Josh? Then you have a daughter in puberty. So
I was going to say, in 10 years, I'll be dreading about to have a teenage daughter. Yeah.
kicking the boys out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I told the, I'm a Freemason, and I told the guys at Lodge, hey, plan on a night in early 2032, be cleaning our guns and, playing poker at my house for when the boy comes over.
I can see that.
Marlena, when you hear this, I'm just joking, except that I'm not. No, in 10 years, I hope to have helped more people and to really have the family together. When I kind of look up at my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, as the architect of the family. He was very soft spoken, very quiet, but he led by example. And when he died, he waited until his three kids were in the room with him, and he said, keep the family together. And the family is kind of dispersed now. We were all living in Massachusetts at that time. The kids were off at college, but now we've got my side of the family. My parents and the kids are down in the southeastern United States, spread apart by a few hours drive, and some of the cousins are still up in Massachusetts, but the whole idea of keeping us together, and then making the rest of the world more like family, and mm-hmm. and keeping everybody together and happy, and I just want to bring more of a sense of comfort and peace to the world.
Wow, amen. And with these beautiful words, I can say to you, thank you very much, Kelvin and Josh, for the great hour of inspiration and warmth and happiness and your beautiful souls.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Peter here. Thanks a lot for listening to What's On Your Mind. Looking forward to your opinions and comments. And don't forget to subscribe on psgrow.com and leave your email address to stay tuned for future episodes. Bye.